Are you a parent who thinks that traveling with children just isn't possible? Or are you someone who wants to make better decisions when traveling but doesn't know where to start? If you're looking for techniques of how to travel more sustainably and secrets to keeping kids entertained, then this is the podcast episode for you. Dr. Rachel Dodds, a hospitality and tourism management professor and author, shares key tips from her new book she wrote with Richard Butler, an international writer and researcher in the field of tourism. The book shares stories from parents from all around the world to help inspire you to travel more responsibly, especially with children. So make sure you get a copy of the book to pack into your carry-on bags for your next adventure. But first, sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Welcome, Rachel, to the Carry On Bags Only podcast.
Thank you. So nice to be here.
I am so excited to have Dr. Rachel Dodds on the podcast. Rachel is a globally recognized expert and change maker in sustainable tourism, and you may have recognized her from being featured in a really powerful film titled The Last Tourist. If you haven't seen it, I highly recommend that you do, as it's going to tie into the conversation that we're going to be having around how you can be more responsible as a traveler. We're also going to discuss her new book, Are We There Yet? Traveling More Responsibly with Your Children, that she co-wrote with Richard Butler, another well-renowned writer and researcher of environmental issues in travel and tourism. If you're a new parent, already have kids, or even if you don't have children but want to learn more about how you can better plan a trip that is both enjoyable and responsible, regardless of where your travels take you, then this is the conversation for you. So before we jump in, I thought it would be a great opportunity for us to learn a little bit more about Rachel. So I was super excited to hear that her and I have a few things in common. So one of those things is being that we both grew up in Calgary, Alberta. And then the second thing is that our career paths weren't a straightforward journey to where we are today. So Rachel, where did your journey into responsible tourism first begin?
Oh my goodness. So funny, isn't it? It could be a long story or a short story, but I'll give you the short story. I think it's so funny. I talk to my students because I teach at Toronto Metropolitan University, and a lot of them assume that our path is totally linear, right? Kind of like we discussed travel. It's linear. We're getting from point A to point B, but that's not it at all. We do this wiggly journey in our lives. We wiggle when we travel and do all sorts of things we didn't think we were going to do. So it's kind of an interesting thing. But for me, I think the pivotal moment, someone's asked me about this, so I haven't had a chance to think about it, is when I was 13 years old and I was traveling with my family in Mexico. So quite privileged that my parents took me traveling. They thought it was a really important thing for us to learn and see the world from a different perspective and have a bit of an understanding. But we were walking back from my birthday. I remember because I'd had coconut ice cream and chocolate cake, which is my favorite thing to eat on my birthday. And we'd managed to find it at some obscure cafe just off the beach. And we were walking back along the beach and there was what I thought was a stream. And we're like, oh, it stinks. And realized it was raw sewage running down from the beach. And it was coming from a hotel. And I was so horrified that I think it really, really stuck with me. But it was my dad who said, at that point, which I still remember, you can choose to be part of the problem or part of the solution. And for me, that was, I think at the time I said, I'm going to be deputy minister of tourism by the time I'm 30 and make sure that all tourism is way better for the earth than for people. Yeah, that part didn't quite work out, but the passion for making tourism better stuck with me.
I know I've heard you talk about this a bit more in other podcasts, just about how your parents really inspired you. And that's something that resonated with me because my parents always taught me at a young age to consider traveling light. Like we would always pack our backpacks and go off to different destinations. And I think it's really neat that something that your dad said to you really paved, you know, your mindset on wanting to get into that.
Yeah. And I think if you're any younger than the age of 40, your parents are, you know, seen as a bit of a chore or they're totally different than you. And growing up, you want to be absolutely nothing like your parents and you disagree with almost everything they say. And all of a sudden there becomes this turning point when you get to an adult and you think, my parents' voice coming out of my mouth or your mindset, you realize that it really, you know, links back to something that you were taught as a child. For me, I learned my father was absolutely adamant that when we went somewhere, we had to learn parts of the local language. So from the age of like 7, I could say, you know, por favor, un café con leche, leche muy, muy caliente, which means, you know, a coffee, please, but the milk very, very hot. And to the extent that he was like, no, you're not, you know, make sure that you smile and make sure that you're polite and make sure that you make an effort in someone's language because you are the visitor here. You are the guest. And those kinds of things that just became normal for me, I realized are not normal in the travel industry. And we think that we have this right to, you know, be served all the time and this neo-colonial approach. And it just really, it gets to me. And so I'm a white woman. So I'm a very privileged white woman. But I think part of it, I've been the only white person in a room and I know what that feels like, or in a country where people have been pulling my hair or pinching me to see if I'm real or wondering why my hair turns a different color when it's when it gets wet, because those things are so foreign. And being the odd person out and, you know, not definitely not to the extent that most people would. And I can't ever say that I have faced racism in the same way that other people have. But a tiny glimpse of that has made me realize how difficult it must be for so many people in this world, and that we have a really big responsibility to make sure that we can empathize and at least try and change that.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more with that. And I know I was able to travel to the Middle East and I went to Dubai, and that was something that I noticed as well, just being in, you know, a supermarket and just having people stare at you. And I think in that moment, I realized like, whoa, okay, I'm not in, you know, North America anymore. I'm part of another culture, and you'll be around and looking at stuff and you may think, okay, yeah, like, this can look and feel, you know, how it would feel at home. But then you get that kind of stark reminder that, okay, no, I am somewhere else and I have to follow those customs. And I think that is the beauty of travel in some ways, is that it really, you have to kind of go in with an open mind and be able to also honor other people's cultures and learn. And it's a great learning experience from that side as well.
Yeah. And it makes us chill out. I mean, I can't remember how many times I've been, you know, I missed the bus, you know, in the middle of Cambodia somewhere and going, well, I can't speak the local language enough to figure out where the next bus stop is. And there's actually no one really around apart from, you know, a few people with chickens. I guess I'm just going to have to kind of figure it out. And when you're taken out of the control driver's seat, I think that you just become a different person. Whereas, you know, in your normal situation or at home, you're upset or you're frustrated because there's a car in front of you turning too slowly, or, you know, someone doesn't cross the road fast enough, or whatever's happening in your work environment, or you get distracted watching emails. When you're traveling, I think a lot of that goes away. And maybe the phone thing, now that everybody's connected all the time, is changing that. But I think that's something that I actually learned to crave, is that you have no control. So you just have to kind of learn to roll with it. And the learning to roll with it is a really great skill for me, especially because I'm a bit of a control freak, I think, but for kids too, which is something I've really noticed in my daughter. I completely see things through her eyes when we're traveling, and it's fascinating. Things that you remember that at one stage you were awed by, but you have forgotten because you're so jaded by the world. And then, you know, a little kid does something and smiles and you realize the simple pleasures in life are really simple. And that I think is a pretty powerful experience too.
Yeah. Well, and it's cool because I think this really ties into a lot of the conversation we're going to have today about the book that you wrote as well, because I know there's a lot of information that you put into there that I think can be really helpful. And I think the thing that I really like about your perspective, which I share, is I think sometimes when, you know, I was reflecting on wanting to travel, I had that guilt of, you know, I know that when I get on a plane, that there's emissions that, you know, the plane is giving off that aren't great for the environment. And I was like, you know, should I be traveling? And I kind of was going through that question in my mind. And I know from some of the other podcasts that I've listened to, you share a perspective of encouraging travel, which I love so much. And I know part of the mission of the Carry On Bags Only process is really just to educate, encourage, and inspire people to get out and see the world, but to find ways to travel lightly and be more responsible. So,
you know, it's funny. I actually love the name of your podcast, because if you just take carry on bags, actually you have a way smaller carbon footprint because you're not stowing baggage. So little things like that make a big difference. But I think we need to be aware that as soon as we travel, we have an impact, right? That can't go away. So travel is never going to be completely sustainable, but it can become more sustainable. And I think for me recently, it was a bit of an epiphany, actually. This book was part of it, is that I realized I'm really good at identifying the problem. I can be cynical about pretty much anything, but that negativity just creates more negativity. And then Richard Butler is probably the best known academic who's written about tourism in general. But he's also the most humble person as well. And he's just so kind. And I said, what about writing something for the non-converted? You know, we write lots of academic stuff, but no one ever reads this mumbo jumbo. How about we do something else? And he's like, yeah, sure. You know, and I thought, oh, how hard can it be? Sillily. But but that kind of encouraging and positive behavior is so much nicer than the shaming and blaming. So I feel like we went through the shaming and blaming. And to be fair, Greta did a brilliant job of shaming and blaming. And because she was so singularly focused pre-pandemic, that really raised a lot of awareness. And then the pandemic all hit us, like kind of being hit by a truck. And now we need to rethink how we want to do things. And I feel that we all need to be a bit nicer to each other and ourselves. And that positivity is what's going to shift, not shaming and blaming.
I agree. And I know you've talked too about how, you know, the pandemic has really caused the need for connection. And traveling is one of those opportunities that allows us to connect with other people, other cultures. So I think it's really important that, you know, people do travel. And I think this book that you wrote is really encouraging. And I was blown away at how much content was available just in one place. And you were very thoughtful of taking stories into consideration and offering, you know, just more than just learning about, you know, the problem, but also allowing people to have those resources at their fingertips. So I think that's really cool.
Well, that's so nice of you. It wasn't just me. It was Richard Butler as well. And also lots of parents from around the world. We wanted to have it, but actually we could have just written a book on how to be a more responsible traveler. Most of the book actually is just about that. So it's not just for parents and grandparents. There any person, you take out a few chapters and it would just be a book about that. But I think we wanted to focus it on kids, partially because I was really shamed when I had a child about traveling. People told me, you can't do that. That's crazy. Why would you take your child there? And that really irked me. And I wanted to shift that perspective. But I feel like we are hard on ourselves, but when we are parents or grandparents or aunts or uncles, nieces, nephews, we allow ourselves to be better because we want the children to see us as better. And so I thought it was an easier way to get rid of that shame by focusing on the impact it would have for a kid, because then it's not about what you're doing wrong or right. It's about what you're doing for them. And I think that's an interesting switch that we maybe need to figure out a little bit, but yeah, it was fun. And actually on that note, the book, we just decided for it's World Tourism Day on September 27th, and it's actually World Animal Day on October 4th. And we just decided that a percentage of the proceeds is going to go to World Animal Protection, because kids love animals and that's really important. And I was really impacted by animal stories with my daughter. And also we have just for between now and October the 4th or 5th, the book is available for $1.99 download as an e-publication, so that it becomes more accessible and equitable to people who can't afford it, right? Because not everyone has that. So for people in developing countries or people who don't have the kind of income but who want to make a difference, it shouldn't just be for the privileged. So we're not going to make any money on $1.99, but we wanted to make sure that it was equitable. And to be fair, if you think you're going to make money writing a book, you might want to rethink that, because it's not about making money. It's just about getting things out there. I think we just needed to brain dump everything that was in our heads. So that was more the process.
No, I love that. And that's amazing that you're able to put this out there, but also have that incentive for people to feel good about getting the book and knowing that it's going to also help with animals as well. So that's amazing. Thank you.
Yeah, it seems to be a repetitive cycle, right? I'm now asking, you know, would you mind reviewing it on Amazon? Because the more reviews you have, the more people see it. But then I realized that we consume products these days by reviews.
Yes.
And so you almost need to have that cycle fulfilling to please write a review. And then you get it, you think, oh, this is a terrible review, I'm not going to do this. Or it's a great review, I might look at it. So I feel like we really look towards other people for acceptance and influence, even though we probably shouldn't. It's just maybe the nature of being online all the time.
And that's something that I'll plug again later in the episode. But to anyone that is listening, I really do encourage people to get a copy of the book and to leave a review. And I'll leave a link to where you can leave a review for the book as well. So one thing that I was going to talk about too around animals was watching the Last Tourist documentary, and they did have a focus around the treatment of animals and especially for entertainment. And I know that I believe it was in Spain, I had done a camel ride, and it was in that moment that I realized that I hated it and that never again would I ever participate in anything animal related. And watching the documentary just hit home again and just reinforced why I don't want to do that kind of stuff. And I really was happy to see that the documentary focused on that and really like showed people what goes on behind the scenes. And I think so much of, you know, traveling, sometimes it's like ignorance is bliss and we don't always realize that things are happening. And I think to draw awareness to that and the fact that this book has proceeds to help with that is amazing.
We all have a choice, I think. I was quite honored to be in a documentary alongside Jane Goodall, but I didn't actually know that, so it's quite funny. But one thing that really stood out is when she said these experiences wouldn't exist unless tourists asked for them. And I really thought, you're right. And I've made all sorts of terrible mistakes in my life. It was only once I figured out after the fact, you know, I am guilty. I went on an elephant ride the first time I went to Thailand in my early 20s, thinking this is what everybody does, I should do this. And it was only after the fact that I saw them with the hooks and the how they were treated, and the almost you can see in an elephant's eyes when you look at them, when they blink these beautiful long eyelashes, you can see the sadness in their eyes. And it was at that moment that I realized, I think I've just made a mistake. You know, Maybe I shouldn't have paid for this. But I don't think a lot of times we ever get to see that. I mean, I happened to go to the bathroom and go to where they were keeping them, and I realized they were, you know, chains and all sorts of things. And I thought, yikes. But we love animals, so we want to go and see them and pet them and play with them and do all these things. I don't think we necessarily cognitively think about the impacts that might cause. And That's the key thing. I mean, I know loads of people who've swum with dolphins, and they said, it was amazing. You know, these animals are so smart and intelligent. But then when you said, you know, like I asked my daughter when she was 4, we were in Mexico and we're walking along and someone, you know, every little girl loves mermaids and dolphins and pink and everything else. My daughter was no exception, weirdly. I'm so pleased she's out of that phase. You know, do you want to swim with dolphins? And she looks at me with this, you know, magic in her eyes. And I said, oh, you know, we'll be back. And I said, where do you think dolphins live? And she said, in the ocean. And I said, where do you think these dolphins are? She looks at me and I said, well, they're in a swimming pool, you know, probably, you know, 20 by 20 swimming pool. And I said, where do you think dolphins should be? That's it. I didn't say this is bad, this is awful, da, da, da. And it's so interesting. We went and we had, I don't know, a batita or something like that and came back. And to her credit, when the man came again, was super engaging and said, would you like to swim with dolphins? She said, that's bad. Dolphins belong in the ocean. And she was so obviously taken by it. I didn't do it. When we got back, we were, her dad was away and we were doing something. And she said, mommy, I want dolphins to not be in swimming pools. I said, so in captivity. And she said, yes, I'm going to call the dolphin place and tell them that that's bad. And I was like, well, that's admirable, but it's not going to help.
Yeah,
possibly, but it's a good idea. But what else could you do? And she's like, I could tell my friends. I said, that's very positive. What else could you do? And we kind of went through this thing. And so then it always, you know, as everybody's conversation seems to these days, comes down to money. And so she decided to use her sticker collection, and we made art projects. And we made dolphins and mermaids and all these things out of stickers. And I used all sorts of old frames I had in my house, and we put them and we baked a bunch of cookies. And her and her friend sat on our front step and sold the artwork to people walking by, because we lived on a relatively busy street, and sold cookies. And her friends were like, what are we going to do with the money? And she said, nothing. It's all going to the dolphins. And she raised something. I think she raised $285 and sent it to a dolphin sanctuary. And I have never been prouder in my entire life of it. Wasn't about her. It wasn't about anything, but diligently for, I think, 8 hours in one day, they sat outside at this little table selling art, and tons of people were just like, this is really pretty. You know, it's $25. But a lot of people, when they read her sign saying, you know, save the dolphins from swimming or whatever it was, and probably not grammatically correct at all for 5 hours. It was so sweet that I think it really tugged on people's heartstrings. And that for me, I thought, wow, we as parents, not just educators or aunts or uncles, have this amazing opportunity to allow us to make a choice And when you make the choice and you do something about it, that is so empowering versus being told that's wrong, that's bad, that's not good enough, right? The negativity enforcement doesn't do anything, but the positivity is just so powerful. It's so exciting.
I love that. I love that you were able to have that conversation and, like you said, not swing it one way or another. And I think the beauty of the book too, is that you have a whole section dedicated to activities that you could do with your kids on a road trip or when you're on vacation. And I myself, I don't have children, but I do know that people around me have kids. And I put this in my review that I would be giving this book out to people as gifts. And I'm serious about that because I feel like even during the pandemic, I remember talking to one of my good friends and just asking, like, you know, how's it going with your kids being at home? And she's like, you know, if any ideas that you might have for activities from your employee engagement days that I can utilize. And she came up with a lot of great stuff. But I think, you know, when you're on a trip and to entertain people, and rather than, you know, just giving a child an iPad or anything like that, you know, to have some education around it. And I think that your book has that opportunity for people to go through and find different activities.
I mean, I think maybe I was brought up in the days before iPhones. So that's one thing. And actually, my cousin's daughter just came to stay with us. And she, even though she's only 24, 25, she was big into card games and all this stuff. And she started playing with my daughter. But I realized it's so easy, right? As parents, you're just overwhelmed. As human beings in general, we're overwhelmed. But as parents, you've got that extra level of overwhelm. And it's so easy to just put your kid in front of the TV or give them an iPad or give them a phone. And then you feel guilty about it. But we agreed, my partner and I agreed, that we weren't going to let our daughter have television until she was three, or screens until she was three. And I tell you, that is seriously hard work. I was the mother at 2 o'clock in the morning on a plane flying back from the UK to see the grandparents, walking her up and down the aisle at 2 o'clock in the morning. And all these people are looking at me like I'm completely nuts. You know, you just have to kind of cope. And to be fair, at that moment, I was not a happy camper, but we learned a whole bunch of things. And there were two key things that friends of mine who had kids told me. Number one is distraction. Everybody will freak out, adults, parents, whatever, kids, they'll freak out. But if they're distracted, the freak out lasts less. So we learned lots of techniques for distraction. And we collected tons of stories from parents around the world. How do you distract? What kinds of things can you do? And the second is planning. She's actually a friend of my sister's. I was talking to her and she has amazing children and now amazing grandchildren. It's almost a bit disgusting how amazing they are. You know, sometimes you're like, how can people be so perfect? She told me a really interesting lesson. She loved art and she wanted her kids to like art, but she knew that if she dragged them through a museum, they wouldn't be engaged. And so she found things, one thing that they could identify with. And at the time, I guess it was the Ninja Turtles. She knew that her kids liked that. So she chose one each. And then she took them to a museum and was like, this is a painting by Raphael. This is a painting by Donatello. And she only showed each kid one painting and they talked about it and then they left. And she said she did that continuously so that they weren't bored. They weren't dragged around. Their experience was something they could relate to, and it was short enough to hold their attention span. And gradually she extended it. And she said all her kids now love going to art galleries. And I thought, wow, of course, but I never would have thought about that. And so that's what we wanted to do. We wanted to collect stories from people on how do you actually do it? Because it's great. There's tons of stuff out there. You should be more responsible. Your climate change has a huge impact on tourism. The environment is, right? It's negative, 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 rather than, so what can you do? What can you do? So that's why there are so many games, which we still play. I always have a pen and paper in my bag when we go to restaurants, because my daughter and I play tic-tac-toe or squares or hangman, or she'll make up a game when she starts to freak out. I'm like, so if you were going to build a castle, which is whatever, you know, age four castles, age five, it was dolphins, age six, it was something else. What would you do? And get her to do a list or things like that. And before you know it, they're so distracted, you're at the end. To be fair, as a parent, it's tiring, but it's worth it.
Yeah, I'm really excited for people to check out the book. There's so many great things. Even at the end of the chapter, you have even more resources about language too, if people are in different places. Like, it's really a book that I think everyone should pack into their carry-on bags and bring with them, or, you know, have a copy online on their phones if they want to check it out that way too. Some of the other things too, when we talk about some of the things that we've done in the past that maybe weren't so responsible. And I think you highlight it, and it's talked about in the documentary too, just around on like, you know, cruise ship travel. And that's something that my parents took us on a ton of cruises when we were a kid. And, you know, I loved it, but I remember people saying to us, like, don't, you know, don't stray off the beaten path and, you know, stick to the cruise ship, recommended, you know, restaurants or stores. And then watching the documentary and being like, oh my gosh, like this is all negative. Like this is not helping the culture of these places that we're traveling into. And so I took a lot away from, you know, just, I guess I assumed that I was, you know, doing my part as a traveler, but I've really realized there's opportunities for me to continue to be more responsible. So even for myself being in this space, I found that I've learned a lot. And, you know, I was curious for you, like, as you were putting this book together, like if there was things like, obviously you had learned from parents about their stories and how they're able to incorporate some of that education in, but was there anything else that you kind of learned along this journey that, you know, was eye-opening to you in any way, like something that you learned or aha moments or anything like that?
Well, it's funny. I work in the academic space and the consulting space. This was a side project. Not entirely sure why I decided to do a side project, but, you know, we got bored during the pandemic. We decided to do all sorts of crazy things. But a lot of things I find, you know, I grew up traveling, loved it, was instilled a lot of responsible behavior when I was a child. Thank you to my parents, but probably a lot of irresponsible things as well. And I think there's nothing wrong with loving travel, but I think it's about having that conscious thought before you go. And so this, I didn't learn this from writing the book, but we put a lot of that, those kinds of tips in, and we didn't want to share people, but people assume that they worked really hard and they have the right to go on holiday. There's nothing wrong with that. And they, Canadians, especially North Americans, will book that 1 week sun holiday. But what they don't realize is the majority of the people who are working in those resorts get paid less than $1 a day. So while you're thinking you're generous by giving them a tip for bringing you a pina colada, I don't think most people realize that those people are being bussed in sometimes 2-3 hours. They don't see their families. They're working shifts of 10 hours or 7 days on with no breaks. Cruise ship workers a lot of times are indentured laborers. They don't get paid at all, or they get paid only in tips. And that kind of realization that that's, again, neo-colonialist, we're kind of perpetuating the inequity by traveling. And so just making one choice by looking at, maybe let's check out to see if this hotel has a responsible tourism policy, or we ask them about their labor practices, or we engage with their staff when we're there to find out about you know, their living conditions or how they're doing or their family. They're never going to tell you what's wrong because they don't want to lose their job. And so I feel like we need to dig a bit deeper, but even asking one question of the hotel, and if the hotel can't answer that, chances are they're not doing anything. And I feel like if you make that choice to say, actually, you know what, I'm going to go stay somewhere that is talking about what they're doing, trying to make sure it's not greenwashed, which is when people kind of fluff over what they're doing and making it seem more than it is, which is a big issue, but just asking a question and making one change, I think can make a huge difference. Because yes, holidays are lovely, but the impact environmentally and socially can be so crazy. It's not just financially. And so for cruise ships, for example, the majority of the money goes right back to the foreign operators. Nothing stays in, barely anything stays in the local economy. And people will say, well, it's port taxes. Well, not really. When you think these destinations have to dispose of the waste, cruise ships can open their bilge at 1 kilometer offshore, which is then international waters, and it's rarely being policed. So if someone Googles cruise ship report card, you will see that almost every single major cruise ship line fails or gets a D in terms of environmental and social behavior. That's pretty shocking. Mm-hmm. But we don't see that side of things. We see the pretty pictures and the ports, and we want to go and have a sun holiday. We don't see we're mowing down mangroves to make room for hotels, and that's what's also contributing to huge issues of like flooding and drought. We don't see as tourists the behind the scenes. And I think the last tourist documentary was very powerful, but it was also very scary. And it was also talking to those people who already travel. And so I think the idea is that if you even just go to grandma's once a year, or you go to Disney once a year, or whatever it is that you do, don't feel bad about going. But if you can make one thing to make your holiday better, that's benefiting everybody, including yourself.
Yeah. And I think just having that little bit of planning ahead of time, just to kind of go through and prepare, like, I know, you know, taking that time to think of, do I have enough money to save for some of the tips? Or, you know, could I invest and spend a little bit more and find a tourist operator that is, you know, operating more green? So I think there's a lot of things that if people are, you know, travelers already, or maybe somebody's thinking of making that first step, just taking that moment to kind of, you know, when you're planning, and that's kind of the fun part too, I find, when you're thinking of booking your travel and that lead up to it, and you're figuring out where you want to stay. And, you know, that can be part of that process.
Definitely. And there's lots of things, like, it's so interesting. There's a website called Sabbatical Homes, which most people would think is just for academics, but anyone can go on and go and stay in someone else's house and do home swaps. You know, you can book, instead of just going to booking.com or Expedia, you can go to Book Different or Fairbnb or EcoBnB and find hotels that have already, or accommodations that have already gone through the check process. I mean, it's really incredible. Every time I now go somewhere warm, there's an organization in Canada called Not Just Tourists, and you can take a bag of medical supplies. And so I usually have carry-on bags, and my one checked baggage that I'm allowed, I pay for, I take medical supplies and give them to a local community. And I just think, right, it is so easy for me to do that. I feel amazing. I feel like, yeah, I've done something for the world, but I've done something good for someone else. Those things are so simple. And there's so many organizations out there that are doing great things. You know, a lot of times we talk about, well, should we offset our flight because of the carbon emissions? Sometimes say, well, is that really making a difference? I don't know. You know, if I feel like we just need to rethink our perspective. So a lot of times someone says, well, I'm doing my bit for the environment, I recycle. Well, for anyone listening, did you know that only 9% of plastic in Canada actually gets recycled? So if you think you're doing your bit by recycling, you're not doing anything, because we need to flip the switch, right? When I was a kid, I learned 3 R's. You reduce, second, you reuse, and if all else fails, then you recycle. And if we start thinking in that shift, we'll save ourselves money, we'll save ourselves time, we'll save ourselves heartache, and we'll feel better about ourselves, and we'll do something good for the planet and the people in it at the same time. So I feel like that's the narrative we need to change, rather than, you know, I recycle.
I agree with that. And I think it's taking that one small step and making that change. And I know it's been a journey for me, and especially coming back to Vancouver, the one thing I really appreciate about being here is just how they do pride themselves on being more green. And one thing that I know you've had involvement in, which really excites me because this is something that is really close to me, is just the greening of festivals. And I know that I'm somebody who likes to go to concerts and, you know, different events around Vancouver, just in general. I volunteered for a couple of different events, and I was really happy to see. And it's funny because I wasn't always in this space. Like, we talked about that with our careers and with corporate social responsibility. I remember kind of coming into it feeling like having imposter syndrome in some ways, because I was like, okay, well, my education wasn't directly influenced. You know, I came into the space in a different way, but now anything I do, I have that lens of diversity, equity, inclusion, and, you know, environmental sustainability. And so when I see events, that's like the first thing I look for is, okay, what are they doing for zero waste? You know, are they a green event? If they put out a survey, I'm filling that survey out and offering recommendations. And so I think it's really cool to hear that you've had such an impact in that space with helping different organizations become more green, which is really cool.
Oh, thanks. I don't know how much impact, but I feel like if we can all try. I worked for a project for the Ministry of the Environment in Ontario. Funnily, never the Ministry of Tourism, always the Ministry of the Environment. And part of it was to do waste audits for festivals, which is, I'm kind of fascinated by garbage, which is a bit gross, but it is actually really fascinating how much we throw away and what we throw away and why we throw it away. But we came out with a toolkit. Honestly, I didn't need something else to do. So we developed the toolkit and put it into a web guide. And then I gave it to the Festival and Events Association and said, do what you will with it, but at least just make it public so that people can have this information. There is a lot of information out there, but sometimes it's very hard. And so I think one of the paths I've been on is to try and put it into one place and make it manageable for those people who need it. Because the big picture, we have a problem, I think we all know, but the what can we do about it is the piece that really, that's what motivates me. I love seeing people change. And so it's the same as if you're a tourist, you do one thing, the next time you might do two, or you might tell your friend about it and they do something, right? It becomes a cycle. And same thing, if one festival says, hey, I'm going to change this, or one hotel does something, it becomes a bit of a competition. And that's kind of, there was I met a really interesting woman a few months ago, and she said, you just got to get people on the train, because it's the first mile that's really tough. But once they're on the train, then they're happy and they sit back and then they start to enjoy the ride. And I feel like once you get on the train of environmental consciousness or social responsibility, once companies start to realize that it actually impacts their bottom line and that doing good means doing well, and once people realize that by doing good, you do well, that's just a positive reinforcement cycle. And I feel like that's where the effort needs to be made, I suppose, is helping people see that it's good for them as well as good for everyone else, right? I was in, when I lived in France a few years ago, there was a national park, a really amazing woman, and it was called Vanoise National Park. And they changed their signs. So instead of saying, please turn off your lights, they said, you can see the stars better if your lights are off. And she said that signage alone of positive reinforcement was unbelievable in the behavior change. And that's where I think such a good lesson, right? They didn't change. They just changed their approach and provided somebody a solution that was beneficial for them and beneficial for everyone else. And that's what it took. That was the first thing. And after that, they did more and more and more. But I just thought it was a great example of, you know, rethinking things.
Well, I know we're running close on time. And one thing that I like to do with some of my guests at the end of our conversation is to do kind of a quick round of rapid fire questions. So I was going to hit you with some of those if you're...
It's like being in an exam.
Promise they're not stressful. One of the questions I wanted to know is, have you ever traveled fully carry-on bags only?
Almost all the time. I hate checking luggage. Unless I am flying somewhere and taking a not just tourist bags, I do my very best. And actually, even with my daughter, we went to Japan, we went with a buggy and two backpacks, and we realized that we didn't even use half the stuff. So I think you don't have to. There's a great rule of thumb is put what you want to pack on the bed, divide it in half again, and you still probably have too much. And that's a great thing. If you can't use something three times, don't pack it. So I think carry-on bags is a great way. Plus, the less you have on a plane is the less carbon you emit, the less stress you have, the less time you wait in line, and the more money you save. So it's win, 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 win.
It's true. Is there an essential travel item that we would find packed in your carry-on bag?
Oh, that is a good thing. I will always have a pad of paper and a pen. I don't know, but I always do carry around this little blue Buddha that someone gave to me in Thailand a really long time ago. It's in my, you know, my face bag. And every time I see it, it does remind me of getting through a really hard time. So I feel like that sort of little memento weighs about 1 ounce, which is why I take it with me. It's nothing heavy. And I will always have extra underwear. That's it. Always.
Love that. And what's one of the things that you do? Well, I guess you kind of answered this, but to pass time on an airplane.
Well, I use oftentimes my work, which is terrible, but I do love the fact that no one can reach you on an airplane. And so I feel like it's forced downtime. You know, it's the chance to watch all those movies that you would never want have time to watch with your partner or your girlfriend or your boyfriend or whoever else. So you get to, you know, the little indulgent pleasures and read. And for me, you know, ever since I had a kid, I often try and sleep. It's a commodity that I don't get enough of.
And what is a book recommendation that you have for other travelers?
Oh, Are We There Yet? Traveling More Responsibly with Children. But I think a local guidebook sometimes goes a long way too. Not because I believe that you should go everywhere in the guidebook, but you can actually see where everyone else goes. And I tend to use it and then avoid it so I can find somewhere else. But yes, I would say a book. A book that makes you smile is a good thing to always have with you.
I like that. And then the last question I have, is there a destination that you would really like to travel to next?
Oh my goodness, there's so many. So I feel really privileged. I've been to lots of countries and so has my daughter. But I have this fascination with Argentina and this fascination right now with Korea. And I have yet to go to either of them. And I'm really hoping that they will be, I keep trying to find a conference so that I can sort of justify work and travel at the same time. But yes, I don't know. Those two countries hold some sort of magic to me right now that I think about quite a lot.
Oh, cool. Well, you'll have to let me know if you end up going, because that would be really neat.
Well, it's funny, you know, I think when you're younger, you check travel off as if it's some sort of a commodity, like, oh, I have a watch. Oh, I have a sweater. Oh, I've been to France. I've done that. And it was funny in one of your other podcasts, I heard somebody saying, I've done that. And I thought, that's such a phrase that maybe we need to change as travelers. You haven't done anything. We have visited, I also don't count. One of my students said to me, how do you count countries? And I said, well, I actually think that the counting countries, I feel a bit guilty for it. I tend to keep track. But some countries I've been to once, and some countries I've been back to, you know, 40, 50 times. And when you go back to somewhere, you know, I was the same one. I did Europe when I was 18.
Yeah,
I didn't do anything. I visited a handful of places. And now that I've been back to those places, I realize, goodness me, every time you go back, you see a different side of things. And you have an appreciation for the things that you missed the first time. Or, you know, you can tell someone about something. But I find I take less pictures now than I ever did before, because I don't want to just have Instagrammable moments. I want to have memories. And sometimes the pictures are really funny. It's doing a funny face when we were at the Tulip Festival in Holland with my daughter. That picture makes me laugh more than the beautiful landscape shots or the, you know, the, I don't know, the sunsets and all these things. They're amazing, but they never come out as well on our phone or our camera than they do in our imagination. And sometimes I think we spend too much time crafting what we think other people want to see rather than just experiencing and enjoying where we are.
I agree. I think we need to live in the moment more. And I know there's been a couple trips that I've gone on where I didn't really have cell service, which was a good thing. And they had a photographer on hand who took some photos of us. Coming back from that trip and seeing one of the photos blown up, I got so emotional because I just, you know, it was a trip that I knew that I was going into and I wasn't always having my phone out. But, you know, that moment to me, someone else might look at it and go, oh, well, you know, yes, you were climbing up a mountain in Scotland. But to me, like, there was so much around that moment that it just resonated with me. But I could really appreciate it because I was in the moment. I wasn't having my phone out trying to take pictures. So I think there is definitely some truth to that.
Yeah, very true. We are consumed by our phone. And to be fair, I mean, I go off grid every year, but I am just as bad as everyone else. The moment I get back on grid, I, you know, I'm randomly massively checking emails and, you know, manic in a way. And that, you know, where we've kind of self-perpetuated that behavior. So I feel like if we take even sometimes just a second, it's hard to do, but maybe that's why Vancouver's such a great place. You go for a walk along the water and you realize that, you know, life is going to be okay.
Well, thank you so much, Rachel, for being on the podcast today.
Well, it was so nice to be here. Thank you. All these funny stories. I feel like when you're on a podcast, it's like a little bit of a self-reflection moment. So maybe sharing just a little bit too much information, especially the underwear comment, but I appreciate the opportunity to talk about the book and also just that it is massively discounted right now for everyone and that we do need to think about equity and inclusion. So maybe if you can afford it, that's great. You know, buy one and leave a review, but maybe buy one for someone else.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I'll leave information in the podcast notes for everybody to reference as well if you're interested in getting a copy.
That's great. And if someone is interested in more sustainable tourism, please feel free to check out my website. If you type in sustainabletourism.net, that's it. It usually comes up in sustainable tourism in the first five anyways. And there's lots of, you know, best practices and tips to do things and all that kind of stuff, as well as just cool companies around the world. As I find them, I tend to talk about them. So again, a bit of a brain dump of fun things, but I feel like we need to encourage the positivity. So thank you so much for having me on the show.
Thank you so much for tuning into the Carry On Bags Only podcast. If you haven't already, hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. Until next time, keep calm and carry on.